A lot of folks joined us since I spoke at the beginning of the last argument. First of all, welcome. It is always a pleasure to have people come to our court. This is an open court where we do the public's business. And so it is a pleasure to see this many people coming to court to watch the oral arguments in this case. Now I turn to counsel. Counsel, understanding that there's only a total of 30 minutes for this argument, 15 minutes per side, and understanding that there are a lot of parties, have counsel made some decisions about allocating time that you have? First, I'll begin with the appellant.
Yes, sir.
And what are you doing?
We represent all of the appellants in this matter, and so I will be doing the argument.
Thank you very much. And for the appellee?
Yes, Your Honor, we have allocated the time and the state defendants as well as the Conservation Commission, and Director Maslin will be making the argument on behalf of all the defendants.
Okay, very good. And I would last ask, I've been reminded by Judge Lichtenstein that I always ask to have cell phones and pagers silenced to make sure that those things don't go off in the middle of argument and distract counsel. With that being said, let us proceed. Counsel?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Martha Tierney. With me at counsel table is Paul Zog. We are here on behalf of the appellants, Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, Carrie and Ruth Weldon, Wesley and Marcia Kent, and Western Colorado Congress. I'll refer to the appellants collectively as the citizens, consistent with the terminology we used in our briefs. The citizens are interested persons entitled to a hearing before the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission on the approval of Encana's applications for permit to drill gas wells as required by the plain language of the Oil and Gas Conservation Act, the Colorado Administrative Procedures Act, and this court's decision in Williams Natural Gas Company versus Mesa Operating Limited Partnership, found at 778 P. 2nd 309. I'd like to address three main points in my argument here this afternoon. First, the citizens have standing because they have alleged material facts establishing that they have suffered an injury in fact to a legally protected interest. Second, that the Commission Rule 503B6 does not preempt the standing for interested persons to obtain a hearing under the plain language of the Oil and Gas Conservation Act and the Colorado Administrative Procedures Act in this court's decision in Williams Natural Gas. And finally, that local governments lack the resources and in some cases the will to stand in the shoes of all interested persons. The citizens allege that the Commission's approval of the Encana APDs threatens to cause a release of radioactive and toxic materials that pose a threat to public safety, to health, to the health of wildlife, and harm to the environment. Since 1951, the General Assembly's approach to the regulation of oil and gas development has consistently been to allow for citizen involvement. And while hearing rights for interested persons have been in the Act from the start, the General Assembly's statutory changes over the years make hearings more necessary now. The Act originally gave the Commission the duty of promoting industry, but the General Assembly has modified that duty in 2007 and required the Commission to seek a balance between industry rights and those affected by industry operations. If the old school was to get the mineral out of the ground, the new school is to foster a balance between developing the resource in a manner consistent with the protection of public health and safety and welfare, including protection of the environment and wildlife resources. Under both schools, the General Assembly gave interested persons the right to a hearing under the Oil and Gas Conservation Act and the Colorado Administrative Procedures Act. Colorado employs a relatively broad definition of standing. A party has standing if, taking the allegations of the complaint as true, it demonstrates that it has suffered an injury in fact, and the injury was to a legally protected interest as contemplated by statute or the Constitution. Injury in fact exists when the action complained of has caused or threatens to cause injury in fact to the plaintiff. The citizens have sufficiently alleged that the approval of the Encana APDs threatens to cause them injury. Their complaint contains detailed factual allegations about their threatened injury, including allegations of the nature of the Rulison blast. Those facts, in brief, are that in 1969, the Atomic Energy Commission dug a hole 8,000 feet subsurface, inserted an atomic bomb, and detonated it. Then they covered up the hole, and subsequent testing of the liberated gas revealed that the gas contained radioactive materials. The citizen's complaint attached a list of nuclear contaminants known to exist after subsurface atomic explosions. The citizens are landowners who own land over the blast site, and citizen groups who promote industry, best practices, and responsible energy development, and also who recreate in the area. Their complaint alleged that the risk that the gas well drilling at Rulison will cause radioactive contaminants to escape and reach the surface or near surface environment, where they may contaminate ground and surface water and land, and present a serious risk to human health and wildlife. A second injury here is the denial of the hearing. The citizens filed petitions seeking a hearing before the commission to test the state's assertions that drilling at Rulison is safe. The trial court found no injury because it found that the citizens received a review of their written complaints by Director Neslin and that he concluded that the risk to the public was extremely low. Yet no one knows what information Director Neslin considered because there's no record. It's undisputed that whatever Director Neslin review, it did not afford the citizens any of the procedural protections offered by an actual hearing conducted on the commission's own rules for conducting hearings. The citizens were injured when that request for hearing was denied.
Ms. Tierney, let me go back to the first basis for injury, and that was the risk of harm. And my understanding is that your opposing counsel is saying, well, that's just the possibility of a harm, and that's not enough to create an injury. In fact, do you have any authority to support that a risk of harm would be sufficient to allege injury in fact for standing?
Yes, Your Honor. The test for standing includes the threat of injury in fact. And here, based on the allegations in the citizen's complaint, they have alleged threat of injury if the radioactive materials were to reach the surface air, land, water environment.
In terms of legal authority, you rely on Friends of the Earth. What cases do you rely on?
Yes, Your Honor. We've cited a number of cases in our briefs, including Friends of the Earth being the seminal U.S. Supreme Court case that holds and confirms that threat of injury is sufficient to establish standing. The Administrative Procedures Act, the Colorado Administrative Procedures Act, also provides a legally protected second prong of the standing test is that the plaintiffs must demonstrate the existence of a legal right or interest that arguably has been violated by the conduct of the other party. The Oil and Gas Conservation Act is the organic or enabling statute for the commission. The plain language of the act creates a legally protected interest here. At section 3460.105.1, the act states that any person may apply for a hearing before the commission. At section 3460.108.7, the act states that on the filing of a petition concerning any matter within the jurisdiction of the commission, it shall promptly fix a date for a hearing thereon. This court in the Williams Natural Gas case interpreted that very section, section 3460.108, and specifically prohibited the kind of conduct engaged in here. The court held that section 3460.108 was unambiguous, that any interested person shall be entitled to be heard before the commission, and that attempts to limit this broad mandatory language violated the carefully and consistently drafted statutory scheme enacted by the General Assembly.
Didn't Williams interpret a different provision of 108? Not the second sentence you're relying on, but a different sentence, wasn't it?
It addressed well spacing hearings, Your Honor, which arguably may be a different sentence in section 108, but we believe that 108 read as a whole and the Williams Natural Gas language interpreting section 108 as a whole, 108.7 as a whole, confirms that there is a hearing right for interested persons here. In fact, in the Williams case, 2 points I'd like to make about that. The court interpreted 108.7 to contain no requirement that a person seeking to participate must demonstrate an appropriate interest, motive, or economic connection as a prerequisite to being heard, reasoning that if we were to engraft a requirement of beneficent motive as a prerequisite, we would be engaging in judicial legislation and would violate the carefully and consistently drafted statutory scheme. Further, the court said that because the language of 108.7 states any person affected by any order of the commission shall have the right at any time to apply to the commission to repeal, amend, modify, or supplement, that this provision would have no meaning if requirements for hearing, for participation in the hearing were as stringent as the commission argued, and it would be an absurd result if you were allowed to appeal an order entered at a hearing, but you weren't allowed to have or participate in that hearing. So I think that this court in Williams Natural Gas, while it was a well-spacing hearing, it looked at Section 108.7 and found that it is unambiguous that interested persons have hearing rights in front of the Oil and Gas Commission. The Colorado Administrative Procedures Act at Section 244.105.2a also provides hearing rights to persons such as the citizens here. 244.107 applies to every agency of the state having statewide territorial jurisdiction, including the commission. By denying the citizens a hearing, the commission violated a legally protected interest created by the Colorado APA. At the trial court, the state and NCANA argued that because Rule 503b6 denies the citizens a hearing, they have no standing to challenge the validity of Rule 503b6. This circular argument ignores well-established Colorado law that agency regulations must be consistent with statutory law and cannot supersede it, and that any agency rules that conflict with statute are without force and effect. The citizens have every right to challenge the validity of rules that conflict with statutes, and there's no special class of rules that is immune from such challenge. Here, Rule 503b6 conflicts with the plain language of the Oil and Gas Conservation Act, as confirmed by this court in Williams, and the plain language of the APA. Local governments lack the resources, and in some cases, the will to stand in the shoes of all interested persons. Counties who sought amicus curiae status and filed briefs in support of the plaintiffs include Garfield, Gunnison, Pitkin, La Plata, Sawatch, San Miguel. Let's listen to what those local governments have to say about Rule 503b6. From the local government perspective, the rule is an unfunded mandate. The commission provides no funding to local governments to perform the task. It's an unwarranted mandate. It's unwarranted to condition a citizen's right to a hearing on a political decision of a county's commissioners. There's no reason to interpose a local government between a citizen and the state. It's an ineffective mandate. The time within which a local government may request a hearing is so short that it practically negates the opportunity. A board of county commissioners may not even have time to meet before the requirement to seek the hearing, the time limit runs. A board of county commissioners may not agree with the request to initiate a hearing for whatever reason. This too denies a citizen's opportunity to be heard by the commission. It's an unfair mandate. The cost of meeting the burden of prosecuting the hearing may be beyond the county's budget. It's an unsound policy mandate, putting the burden on county governments to object on behalf of a constituent when many of these local governments do their own oil and gas permitting, creates a conflict of interest for the county. And finally, it's an unnecessary mandate. There's no reason based on administrative burden that should preclude the state from holding hearings when properly requested by interested persons. The General Assembly intended for the commission to let all persons in the door. And then once they are in the door, the commission has an opportunity to manage the scope and presentation of evidence at the hearing.
Yeah, Ms. Tierney, let me ask you this. You said all persons. This is interested person. Does that mean anything? Interested person? That means anybody that professes a self-interest in this can get the hearing that you're saying that your clients are entitled to under 108.7?
Your Honor, it does say interested persons, and presumably there interested persons would have to show an interest. Where that line is drawn, the commission is going to have to decide. But here we have landowners overlying the blast site and recreation groups that recreate in the area. This is a application for a permit to drill in a nuclear blast site. So these persons meet the test of interested persons under the statute. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
No
About a minute.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Matt Lepore. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Colorado. I represent the state defendants, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and Director David Neslin in his official capacity as director of the agency. With me at table is Keith Tooley of Wellborn, Sullivan, Meck, and Tooley, who represents the defendant in Encana Oil and Gas USA. The issue before you today is whether plaintiffs, and indeed all persons, have a legal right to a hearing before the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission on an application for permit to drill oil and gas wells filed by an oil and gas operator. The district court properly held that no such right exists under either the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Act or the State Administrative Procedures Act. Rather, the court below found that the General Assembly had granted the commission broad authority to establish rules and regulations governing applications for permits to drill under 3460.106(1)(f) of the Act, and that the commission rules allowing the director to approve APDs without a hearing in most cases are proper.
Pardon me for interrupting you, Mr. 1061F state anywhere within that subsection that no hearings are to be held in the permitting process?
It does not say specifically that no hearing is to be held, Your Honor. It says that the commission is free to establish rules and regulations as it may prescribe with respect to issuing permits if it in fact chooses to require permits to drill.
Is one reasonable reading of that subsection to say, well, commission, this is something that you folks do all the time, so therefore it's okay if you want to set up rules and regulations, but if no one asks for a hearing, permitting goes as you approve. But if you look at the rest of this statute, if there's a request for a hearing, then you got to have one. So isn't that reading the statute, the whole statutory framework as a whole, consistently with all its parts?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that 3460.106(1)(f) is the specific statutory provision that controls permitting and issuance of permits by the commission. 108 is a separate section of the Act that deals with rules, regulations, and hearings. Looking at 108 as a whole, 108 deals with rules, regulations, and orders consistently throughout that section.
I'm a little stuck on that one. 108.7 says any matter within jurisdiction of the commission, and you're saying, well, it must mean only rules, regulations, and orders. I don't see that in the title of 108. It says rules, hearings, process. I'm at a loss to find out where that that gloss on that 108.7 second sentence comes from.
Mm-hmm. First, Your Honor, I think the title of 108 does suggest that. It says rules, regulations,
nope, it hearings. Says rules, hearings, process.
Rules, hearings, process.
Okay.
Not permits.
Doesn't say orders. I mean, you're saying it says rules, regulations, orders. It says rules, hearings, process, and this talks about a hearing.
And the second section talks about rules, regulations, and orders that the commission right. shall issue. Even 108.7 throughout refers to orders that the commission may issue. So when there is a hearing, the commission will issue an order, not a permit.
Let me ask you, if a permit is contested and there is a hearing, does not that become an order?
If there was an adjudicatory hearing on a permit after the permit had been issued, or if, for example, it had been denied and the applicant sought a hearing or the local government sought a hearing, yes, there would be an order, and that would be an order of the commission.
But whether a permit approval or denial becomes an order depends on whether there's a hearing.
It depends on whether there is a hearing, and yes.
And they're saying we're entitled to a hearing, and if they're right, then this becomes an adjudicatory process that leads to the promulgation of an order. So isn't it kind of circular?
I don't think so, Your Honor. If they're right, it's also true, and if your reading is true, if your reading is accurate, it's also true that every single permit that the commission orders, issues rather, would be subject to a hearing. if an issuance of a permit is equivalent to an order, then all 6,000 or 7,000 permits that the commission issues each year would have to be subject to adjudicatory hearing. And there is simply no way that a 9-person volunteer commission can hold 6,000 or 7,000 adjudicatory hearings each year.
Let me ask you a question about that, Mr. Lepore. I understand that there's the statement that there are those, there are that many permits, but there is no statement about how many requests for hearings there are. And as I suggested before, it seems to me one way to read this statute is the commission says, okay, we want to permit this, allows for notice. If there's no request for a hearing, there's no need for one. I further suggest that there are alternative things that the commission can do. One of them is that the statute specifically allows for a hearing officer to sit on these things for the commission. And the hearing and you could have a hearing officer to resolve the disputed permits. And secondly, the commission itself can modify its rules in order to make these procedures efficient, of course, within due process restraints, but efficient. So I don't know how deeply that knife that you're wielding cuts.
Your Honor, I can't tell you a statistic on how many of the 6 or 7,000 permit applications there are hearings sought for. I would suggest that if the commission, if we adopt the stance that you're suggesting, that number will only increase, that once citizens realize that this is an open door policy on applications for permits to drill, quite frankly, I think it will open the floodgates. I mean, there are plenty of reasons that an average citizen wouldn't be interested in oil and gas operations in some proximity to their property or what have you.
Well, aren't the floodgates theoretically opened already? Because there are three exceptions. One, of course, is limited geographically. That's within half a mile of ground zero. But the second, local governments can come in, and we've heard that some local governments like that, Weld County, for example, says, yeah, we like this situation just fine. But a local government could come in repeatedly and frequently and create the need for a lot of hearings. But we're not hearing that that happened. And then thirdly, we have the prospect for hearings every time that a permit gets denied. So if the commission denied a bunch of permits, there's a bunch of hearings.
I think that's right, Your Honor. And I'll start with the denial first. I mean, the denial procedures provided by the Act and the commission's rules are consistent with the APA procedures for licensing. So if an applicant for a license has that application denied, that applicant is entitled to a hearing. That is the same as the commission rules, effectively. And I think a permit is equivalent to a license under the APA. So there's no difference there. The local government opportunity for a hearing, I think, is simply a reasonable check and balance. I mean, if a citizen can go to their local government designee and say, listen, here's what the commission is up to. You know, we think it's a problem for public health, safety, and welfare. Would you please ask for a hearing? That's a fair and reasonable check and balance. And that's the situation that's in place. So those floodgates in that sense have not opened, but you've heard the plaintiff's counsel describe, you know, why some local government designees, you know, feel that that's too difficult for them. Other counties, as you suggest, are perfectly happy with that situation.
So are you saying it's okay to have local government as a check and balance, but not to have a citizen as a check and a balance?
Yes, Your Honor, under the statutory structure that the General Assembly has established here, I think that's right. I mean, quite bluntly, I don't think that the commission is obligated to have the local government check and balance, but it's fair and it's reasonable and it's one way. And that has been expanded in the 2008 rules. There was an extensive revamping of the rules in 2008. And now the surface owner has also a right to seek a hearing before the commission. So it's been expanded somewhat. Not to the extent the plaintiffs here would like, but beyond what it was previously.
Let me ask you this question. It's more conceptual. And I know you didn't move to dismiss under 12B1 in the district court. I think that was uncounted at that. But you're defending the denial of a or the grant of a motion to dismiss for lack of standing. It seems to me we've gotten to the merits, and inevitably we're going to. Don't these citizens have an injury in fact? They've said that we live near an area that may be affected by the project Rulison. And they have said that we have arguably a right to a hearing that we're being denied. So don't we get to the merits? I'm stuck on affirming, at the very least, on lack of standing.
Two responses, Your Honor. First, I think it's very important for the court to understand what injury the plaintiffs sought redress for in the district court. They did not ask the district court to find that director's decision to issue the APDs was arbitrary and capricious because it caused them or threatened to cause them an imminent harm. They asked the court to grant them a right to a hearing. So quite frankly, whether or not they have sufficiently alleged the potential for harm to them from drilling near Rulison, I think is irrelevant to the case they chose to bring. One of the avenues that citizens have with respect to APDs is judicial review. The commission rules make that a final agency action.
Judicial review in a process and a proceeding that they were not allowed to participate in. They could not bring their evidence and their arguments to the fact finder. And in fact, they were not. So isn't that just taken on those terms? Procedural injury here is injury in fact, is it not?
Well, again, two things I think it's important to try to distinguish carefully. The threat of harm from drilling, which I would like to submit to you is too speculative to give rise to standing. And I made that argument in the briefs, and I'll get back to that if I can. It's very, very attenuated, Your Honor. It may happen. There may be a release. They may be exposed to that release. It may be at a level that could potentially cause them harm. There's an enormous chain of events between the granting of the permit and the harm that they are suggesting. But again, I do not think that is the relief they sought in the district court. They said, we would like the court to give us a hearing on these APDs. That is what they said over and over.
And they're saying we have a legal right to a hearing that we were denied. And that, if they're right, that's a procedural injury.
I agree with you. If they're right, that is an injury.
And that's a question on the merits then. Then aren't we at the merits? And do they have the right that they're asking for? If they're right, they've been injured. And so isn't that a merits question?
The district court, Your Honor, found that plain reading of the statute was that they do not have that right. So there is no standing. There is no injury in fact. More importantly, for standing purposes, that injury in fact has to be to a legally protected interest. If there's not a right to a hearing under the statute, under the act, there is no legally protected interest.
Well, Mr. Lepore, if the dispute is over whether they have a right to a hearing, wouldn't they have standing to litigate whether they have a right to a hearing?
Again, Your Honor, I think that the district court looked at the allegations of their complaint. What comes first, it's their burden to establish standing on the face of their complaint or other evidence available to the court. In this case, the plaintiffs attached a number of documents that the court did look at. On the face of the complaint and on the plain reading of the statute, which is a matter of law, the court said they are not entitled to a hearing. Therefore, they cannot allege either the injury in fact or harm to a legally protected interest.
Let me go back to that statute. The statute, what you're stating is to the extent that Section 108 may grant a broad general grant to a hearing, there's the more specific section under 106, which says a commission is free to adopt their own rules and procedures. And what you're saying is that specific controls over the more general. Do I understand your argument correctly?
I think that's fair and sufficient, Your Honor.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Just to finish the thought, I mean, I think you have to look at the statute as a whole. I think you have 105 that grants jurisdiction to hearings. You have 108 that I think is limited to rules, regulations, and order. Let me just say that throughout the statute, every section where permits are referenced, they are distinguished from orders. And if permits were part of orders, what need is there for the General Assembly to separately point out permits and orders? And that happens every time permits are mentioned.
Well, let me go back to my question about reading the statute as a whole, because I am reading the statute as a whole, and there's a section that statute that is kind of bothering me with this argument, and I'd like you to have a chance to respond. Under 346106, subsection 4, it says the grant of any specific power shall not be construed to be in derogation and of any general powers or authority under this article. And I think you're arguing that the specific controls, and I'm reading this, which is perhaps suggesting otherwise, and I just wanted to hear your response to that.
My response, I think, Your Honor, is that in granting to the commission these various powers that they have and enumerating a number of specific ones, my take on that was that they did not mean to limit the very broad power the commission was granted to regulate oil and gas operations throughout the state and to implement what plaintiff's counsel correctly characterized as the need to balance production of the resource with production of the public health, safety, and welfare, and to avoid waste of the resource.
I know your time has expired. Judge Bernard allowed me to ask one follow-up question. You've made the argument that this would overwhelm, this kind of hearing process would overwhelm the nine-member, I think it's a nine-member commission?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it true that under the commission's rules that every contested permit application, whether by a city or by a licensee that's been denied a license and permit, every contested hearing has to go before the nine members, or is there any, because I don't think that's required by the APA or by the Act itself, but is that required by the Commission's current regulations?
That is how it goes forward, yes, Your Honor. I think Judge Bernard mentioned the possibility of a hearing officer. It could go before a hearing officer, but the hearing officer would only circumvent the full adjudicatory hearing before the Commission if all parties agreed, essentially, if you had the effects of a settlement or withdrawal of the protests. The hearing officer's decision has to be affirmed by the entire commission. So, I mean, there's potentially a sort of streamlined consent agenda method for approval of things that have been handled at the administrative level, again, where everyone has agreed or withdrawn their protest. But if it remained a protested matter post-hearing officer, it would be before the entire commission.
So there is a hearing officer provision to hear the evidence that actually sit there. If it's a day-long hearing or a two-day-long hearing, it'll be heard before one officer, and then the commission will review under current regulations? Or that's what I'm really – how does it work currently?
It could go that way, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
But again, the hearing officer essentially, in reality, resolves procedural matters. The substance almost, in my experience, invariably does go to the full commission.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Bailiff, would you please add 2 minutes and 45 seconds to Ms. Tierney's time so that we balance things out? That's roughly, by my watch, the extra time that Mr. Lepore had.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome, counsel. Please proceed.
Mr. Lepore.
Ready? Okay. There we go.
Mr. Lepore spoke of that the threat of the harm was too speculative, and I wanted to address that. Prior to the issuance of an APD, the threat is always going to be, the injury is always going to be threatened. We aren't going to know what the injury is yet until the APD is actually issued. So we have to be able to allege the threat of injury, and as Colorado recognizes in the Wimberley versus Ettenberg case and in the Friends of the Earth case at the Supreme Court, that threat of injury is sufficient to establish standing. Furthermore, if current events teach us anything, it's that knowledgeable, science-based regulation on the front end of oil and gas development may go a long way toward protecting us from the unexpected and the uncontrollable on the back end. Judge Lichtenstein, you asked about the specific versus the general, and I wanted to address that briefly. A specific or general or specific provision of the statute prevails over a general provision only if the provisions are in conflict. Here, as you rightly point out, there is the provision in 106 that suggests that here that general canon of statutory construction may not apply anyway, but in the event that it does, there's no conflict between these two statutes. When read properly, the two sections of the Act do not conflict. Section 3461087 requires that interested parties be given a hearing. Section 3460106F allows the Commission to adopt rules on the practice and procedure of filing an APD. These rules do not conflict, these statutory provisions do not conflict. Because they're entirely consistent, both must be applied, and the question of whether one or the other is more specific is irrelevant. Rule 503B6 is inconsistent with the statute because it directly conflicts, and the rule is therefore without force and effect. Also referenced the issue of what do we do if the Commission is deluged with hearing requests. And I submit to you that this court is very familiar with being an all-comers court. The General Assembly intended for the Commission to let all interested persons in the door, and then once they're in the door, the Commission has an opportunity to manage the scope and presentation of the evidence at the hearing. Other public bodies have similarly opened doors, and they are able to function. Anyone who disputes his property tax valuation can appeal to a state board. Anyone who loses a civil or criminal case in a Colorado district court has a right to be heard in this court. Certainly, this court's workload could be reduced if you adopted a rule of appellate procedure that limited the right to be heard to certain persons. But you can't do that because you haven't done that. Whether we're talking about this court or any other state agency that allows broad standing, the great majority of applications do not, for a host of practical reasons, result in hearings. But when they do, the agency has mechanisms to manage these hearings, just like this court and other public agencies do. Since we did get to the merits, and since we've been talking about the merits, the citizens in closing would ask this court to decide as a matter of law that Commission Rule 503B6 limiting hearing rights on an APD to the applicant or the relevant local government is invalid and without force or effect because it conflicts with the plain language of the Oil and Gas Conservation Act as previously interpreted by this court in Williams Natural Gas and with the plain language of the Colorado APA, which grants hearing rights to all interested persons. Thank you.
Mr. Trini, Mr. Lepore, thank you very much for your excellent arguments today. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. We are now done with our oral arguments for this afternoon.